on page 21, Kshador Hu Shofel, on the bottom of page 21. Kshador Hu Shofel. Cook says, if the generation is a generation that is in the place of shiflus, it's a generation that is not in a good place. It's a place of shiflus. Kshimusar ha'atzmi hu nishchas. If we would see that the generation, that the ethical, moral quality of the generation is corrupt, is ruined. If we would see that the concept of tzedek and yosher that's natural in a person would not be properly developed in the generation, then if we would be dealing with such people who are completely consumed by taivas, by things of this world, and they don't have a sense of idealism and so on, then there would be no point. The machshava, whatever literature, whatever inspiration would be offered to them, it wouldn't help. It would have a very little effect. However, Kevin Shahador Misala, page 22. Kevin Shahador Misalev, Rav Kook says, but that's not the case. That's not the case. Kevin Shahador Misalev. The generation is Misalev in terms of idealism and a sense of Yashuas and Tzedek. Kevin Shahador Misalev, the generation is greater than the generation is Misalev. It's ascending. It's great. There's a tremendous tzimaon. There's a tremendous thirst for emes, for yosher. Kevin shumargish bekirbo atzilus va'adinus. It's a generation that feels within it a certain sense of nobility, a certain sense of adinus, of edelkeit. Netia chazoka lahaskel ulehetiv. There's a tremendous netia to try to understand it, to try to be better. V'hakar pnimis. And a deep understanding, an inner understanding, with many of the pathways and ways of life, more than in the past, when in the earlier generations that we learned, people were able to just continue going on according to the Messiah that they received, and they carried the all of Torah Mitzvahs, but without identifying with the Messiah, without having a feeling for what was going on. But this generation, Rav Kook says, is different. Even though we know that all of these positive things are not yet fully developed, the generation is thirsting for an understanding, to try to have a sense of how the Torah speaks to them. A regish, a sense of yosher, looking for yashvas, which is shomein, fat. Shomein is fat, it's healthy. Verotov meaning it's moist, wet, ranan, fresh, v'chai, and alive. There's a sheifa, there's a longing for a way of life that flows, that's alive, that's real. Omnam b'nesivos hakedumais, the bottom of page 22. Now, Rav Kook says that in earlier generations, there were Jews that sought to be parik ol, that wanted to get out. Omnam b'nesivos hakedumais mitzad hatchunas shahalim ratarani hamusari v'hamasi. There were those who couldn't stand being part of the community, And the way of learning Hamusari, which means the Nyanim of Emuna and Masi and practical matters of Halacha, nevertheless, Hayamurga Lios Lavushba Vyom Shavu. In other words, everything was just accepted that this is the way that we live. Even though there are people that wanted to be Pyrocal, there were many, many Jews that would have preferred leaving the fold, but they didn't. In those years, in the earlier years, Rav Kook says, everything was in a matzav of tzimtzum and katnus. Everything was in a state of constriction and smallness. The entire view of Torah was, am I going to go to Gan Eden? Am I going to go to Gehenna? Am I going to be in trouble? Am I not going to be in trouble? But Mimela, we have to remember that for the most part in those years, people were so consumed with just trying to survive, with just trying to manage. And therefore, when there was a person who wanted out, and who was ready to rebel against the Mesorah, it really was also coming from a place of katnus, of smallness. In general, people lived, the average person lived obsessed with himself, with his family, as we learned, with his little world. And when it came time for that person who just needed to get out, it was also mostly due to a certain katnus that had to do with his taivus, with his yetzahara. It was all about himself. So, since people were afraid of losing Gan Eden, they were afraid of going to Gehenna, some people just came to the conclusion that I'm not going to wait, I'm not going to suffer in this world and wait for Gan Eden afterwards, I'm just going to try to make a Gan Eden now. The basic objective of life was, how is it possible to avoid suffering as much as possible, and how am I able to enjoy as much as possible? So most Jews in those days continued to adhere to the Mesorah with the hope that as a result of living in Gehenna in this world, a miserable life in this world, that things will be good in the next world, and that's where they're going to have their Gan Eden. And there are others who were equally obsessed with themselves and their own fate, but they were not able to bear the Gehenna in this world and the Gan Eden in the next world. So they switched. They decided they would try to have a Gan Eden in this world, to have things good in this world, and to indulge in all kinds of pleasures and fantasies in this world. And the Gehenna, they figured they'd take care of in the next world. But it was all about, what could I enjoy? What am I trying to avoid? I'm trying to avoid Gehenna. What do I want? I want Gan Eden. So most Jews were trying to make it through Gehenna in this world, and this way they would get to Gan Eden in the next world. But it was all about, how do I benefit? What's the benefit of being a Jew? What do I gain by being a Jew? I gain Gan Eden. What do I stand to lose if I'm not a Jew? I can lose Gan Eden and I can suffer Gehenna. But it was still at a place of katnus, without understanding. It was just a matter of fear, of pachad. And therefore, for those who couldn't bear it anymore, they made that choice to try to make for themselves a Gan Eden in this world, to try to find some sort of a paradise, indulging in the taivas of this world. And they figured that a little later on, so we'll worry about Gehenna later. But it was all about shiflus and katnus and the personal toelus of what could I gain and what might I lose. In the earlier generations, for the most part, again with the exception of great individuals, but the Hamayinam, the multitudes, were not yet prepared to live with tremendous she'ifas for Dveikus Bashem and Ahavas Hashem and experiencing Gan Eden in davening, experiencing Gan Eden in learning. Learning had nothing to do with Gan Eden. Learning was a matter of obedience. Observing halacha was not a Gan Eden for the most part. It was a matter of obedience. It was hard. As far as she'ifas gedolos, great longings for madregis and so on, they were not yet ready for such a thing. Royal she'ifas goes for chol tachlu of hamusarium hayuchol miskanis rak beza shiflus shel taiva. Therefore, all of the sickness, the ethical, moral sickness, the religious sickness that people were going through when they couldn't bear it anymore, it just ended up bringing them into a shiflus of taiva. Into a shiflus of taiva. In other words, as we learned at the beginning of the Maamar, not that they were looking for great philosophical ideologies and new ways of life. They were just looking for a bar and for some other, you know, way of having fun on a Saturday night, period. It wasn't about philosophy, it wasn't about ideology. There was a katnus and there was a shiflus. The Yiddishkeit was kept in a state of katnus and shiflus. And when it became unbearable, so then the option was also an option of shiflus of taiva. It was very small. It was just a matter of personal satisfaction and gain. It had nothing to do with great ideological longings for something bigger and something greater and to become a great person outside of Judaism. They're not looking for godless. They're not looking for madrigas. Yiddishkeit was for the most part a matter of obedience, of shiftless, of katnus, and the option was a matter of shiftless and katnus. It's just it was more enjoyable. Better than sitting in the sukkah, you could sit in the bar. Or better than sitting in the bis medrash, because they couldn't bear anymore, so they'd be with a girlfriend or something. And that was it. It wasn't a matter of godless and madrigas and she'ifas and trying to understand life and trying to come to terms with the neshama. It wasn't anything about that. It didn't make a difference, whatever the sug was. So that was the nature of rebellion in the early years. The nature of rebellion of prikas ol in the early years was that was the kind of Yiddishkeit there was, and that was what they wanted to get out of. The type of Yiddishkeit was the Yiddishkeit of katnus. Man was small, was diminished, and in that diminished state, he was focused on satisfying his taivas, the zohu. But it's very different now. For Akshav, Rav Kook says, however, now, haklal nisroimem al cheshbonam shel ha'ishim ha'protim. I mentioned this at the end last week. Now, the mered, the rebellion against Yiddishkeit, the rebellion against the Mesorah, is no longer an expression of shiflus. The rebellion now is not coming from a low place. Although Rav Kook always says, of course there are individuals who will jump onto the bandwagon. But for the most part, the rebellion is not coming from a place of shiflus. Other of it. And he says, this is the terrible mistake of the old yeshuv. This is the terrible mistake of the old school. He says, it's no longer coming from a place of katnus and shiflus. Those who are rebelling from a place of godless. Because they have big she'ifas. They want that because they're looking for something that makes sense. They're looking for the truth. It's no longer a matter of how do I satisfy my desires, how do I satisfy myself, how do I get Gan Eden and avoid Gehenna. And a lot of this had to do with modernization. In the past, people didn't really have much time to think. They were exhausted from life itself and just trying to survive. They didn't have time to think as far as any kind of intellectual undertakings that was not part of life.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
What?
Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
And just to survive was considered to be the most noble fight of all, just to manage, and that's it. There wasn't any time to develop a bigger personality and intellect. What, they're going to start reading French literature? French literature when the Cossacks are going to burn down your farm the next morning. Life was for the most part one that was focused entirely on survival. It wasn't about developing into broader intellectuals, into deeper people, and so on. And they were forced to focus on themselves. Like you see now. Even though for the most part life, Baruch Hashem, is much, much, much better. But those people who are going through psychological stress and turmoil, and there are many people now who go through terrible stress and turmoil, psychological, emotional turmoil for whatever reason, those people, that when you speak to them, they can't think really of anything about they can't think of anything outside of themselves. They can't think of bigger things. How are you supposed to think of something bigger if you're just overwhelmed with getting up in the morning? If you're totally, if you're totally beside yourself when it comes to work or when it comes to school or just managing the children or taking care of the family. So what happens to people is that they shrink. They just become tiny. When it's just a matter of survival, so then you shrink into a very small place, and then part of the way of surviving is to just try to forget about your tzaras, to forget about your troubles, and to have a drink, to get drunk, or to get high in all different kinds of ways, or to throw yourself into different kinds of addictions with pornography, chalil, and all these different things. When a person is not in a place where he's able to think of a metzias beyond the shtetl. In the old days, it was because of external. It's because of external suffering and misery, because of the way we were living, because of what was going on with our enemies, and trying to be able to make a living. Nowadays, when people, Baruch Hashem, for the most part, are not worried, at least in Chutz Laaretz, are not worried about what's happening with their enemies, and they're able to have what to eat. The Cossacks are now inside the brain. The Cossacks have infiltrated into the heart. So you can have a person that lives in a beautiful home and has everything that he needs, and yet he feels that he's surrounded. He feels that he is being crushed by life. And as a result of that, he's not able to be mifateach, he's not able to open up and to develop a spiritual personality. He's not able to develop emotionally and spiritually and psychologically. Whatever time he has, he's going two or three times a week to the therapist. And when he's not at the therapist, he can't think straight because he's on so much medication. So he also can't. Modern man is also unable to go beyond the shtetl. It's just the shtetl is not a physical shtetl; it's an emotional shtetl. Still, a place of terrible confinement. So all the ruchnias of a Jew, all the holiness, the power, the energy, the unbelievable, the infinite koch of a Jewish neshama in the past was trapped inside that place of katnas because of external influences and suffering. And in our times is trapped inside because of internal misery and suffering and pressure and so on. But the bottom line is that the individual is not able to develop and to grow beyond himself, and therefore modern man is also in that way consumed with himself, obsessed with himself, and all of that has to do with the technology and the use of technology and so on. There was a bacher the other day. I was walking to the Beis Medrash, and a bacher was and I was looking, and there was a bacher that just smashed into me. He was on the thing. He just smashed into me. He was walking, looking at the thing, and he just smashed into me. And he just looked at me, because he was in the middle of a text. He just looked at me, and he didn't say anything. And he didn't say he was sorry. He just went around and he continued on going on this thing. Now, when I was 17, 18 years old, if I bumped into an old man, that was considered to be a serious infraction. And the boy's probably the sweetest boy on earth. He wasn't even in a place where he could. Where he could even think about it. He didn't realize that he knocked into somebody. He didn't know that he knocked it. I don't know what it was. He just looked at me, and he walked around, and he continued doing his thing. And the katnus, the retreat, the loss of godless nefshif is something that in a very different way we're suffering from the same thing. However, what Rav Kook is saying here is he says an amazing thing. And this is what we were talking about at the end last week. Rav Kook had a theory. He talks about it in the Iris HaKadosh in a few places and the Iris. Rav Kook had a theory. It wasn't Rav Kook's own idea. It's based, like everything in Rav Kook, in the Zohar, the Tikkun HaZohar, the Kisvei Ari. Rav Kook had a theory that there's a certain amount of ruchnias that in every generation there's a certain amount of ruchnias that the Jewish people have possession of. His theory of spiritual displacement means that if the ruchnias is not going to be used by the Hamayin Am, if the Ruchnis is not going to be used in small measure, in small dosages by millions of Jews, then what happens to it is it's there, but the individuals, there will be a small number of individuals who are going to take hold of that Ruchnis, that's out there in the generation. So what he says is a remarkable thing. He says, "V'achshav haklal nisromim." In our days, haklal nisromim, we find that the multitudes of Jews, the simple average Jews, are elevated to a higher level that are seeking the truth and looking for something big. Al cheshbonim shel ha'ishim ha'protim. On the cheshbon, it's on a cheshbon. Al cheshbonim of the private, of the individual, of the select elite Jews. In other words, in the past, Rav Kook says, in the past, the koach of Kedusha was not something that interested the Hamaynam. The multitudes, the average Jews, were not interested in learning Rav Kook. They're not interested not in Bilvavi. They weren't interested in learning Hasidus and Pnimius and Dveikis. The Hamaynam was interested in cows and milk and goats and so on, and farming, and a little bit Chumash. Already Chumash Rashi was a Madrega, the women a little bit Sanarana and so on. There was not an interest in Kedusha. It wasn't like people sat around in the cafeteria talking about how's my Kavana today. That was not where they were. The Koch of Kedusha was, for the most part, by the Hamayinam, was Mufkeres. Was Hefke. That wasn't where they were at. That wasn't what they were interested in. And therefore, the Kedusha that was available to the generation was Misrakes, became focused on those few individuals who Be'emes were seeking it. Now, the few individuals who were seeking it, naturally, with the elite in the yeshivas and the Batei Midrashim, were the Talmid Chachamim of the generation. Therefore, Rav Kook writes about this in a number of places. The Kedusha was wandering the earth. The way that Rav Kook said in his time, prophecy was wandering. Nevuah is a beginning. Nevuah is roaming the earth. Nevuah. Rav Kook holds that in the early generations, in each generation, Kedusha was there, a certain measure of holiness was there, and it was looking for chassidim. The Kedusha was looking for customers. For customers who are interested in Kedusha. Those who are open and ready for Dveikus B'Hashem. You don't have to be a Talmid Chacham, but those who are interested in Kedusha, in Tefillah Be'emes, in Mikveh, in Avodah, in Yerushalayim, Be'emes, in Pnimius, Kedusha was looking for customers, and Kedusha did not find a place to be mispashet, to spread its wings among the Hamayinam. Because the Hamayinam were, as we learned a minute ago, the Hamayinam were not interested in Kedusha. They were interested in not going to Gehenim and going to Gan Eden. And in order to be on the program, you had to go to Shul, you had to do this, you had to do that, you can't be Machal Shabbos, you can't eat Parfis and so on. Be a good boy, be a good girl. Gehenim is a bad place. This world is Gehenna, might as well have something good in the next world. And that was the program. As far as Dveikus and Madregus and Sheifus and Godless, that was not what they were interested in. So, all of that Kedusha in each generation was available and was not able to be mispashet by the Hamaynam. Couldn't find homes, couldn't find hearts and minds in the typical average man and woman in the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century. Couldn't find customers. They were busy. They were not interested in Kedusha. Everything was about katnus. The Yiddishkeit was katnus, and life was katnus. It was just to be able to manage. So, couldn't find customers. And the only customers Kedusha could find were those select individuals, again, mostly those who decided in those days to dedicate their lives to Limud HaTorah, to learning Torah. And those few individuals became the nuclear reactors that were able to be kalim to absorb the kedusha that was available to the entire generation. So Rav Kook says an amazing thing. In the past, the way Jewish society was like this. You had in one generation, it's hard for us to imagine. Let's just go to the Beis Medrash of the Mezitcha Magid. Okay, let's talk about the Beis Medrash of the Mezitcha Magid for a minute. In the Beis Medrash of the Mezitcha Magid, just a few names that you're familiar with that everybody knows. From the Mezitcha Magid, you had in that same Beis Medrash, you had the Rebbe Elimelech, right? You had the Chayza, you had the Chayza Melublin. You had the Hasla. You had his brother, the Rebbe Reb Shmelke. You had the Balatanya. You had the Bedichiva. Where do you get a school like that? Where do you have like the graduating class of 1792? Like that's where do you get a class like that?
Four valedictorians.
They were all valedictorians, right? Where do you get a class like that? So who are the people outside the Beis Medrash of Mizrach Shemagi? Now remember that the inyan of the Baal Shem was to reach out to simple Jews and to inspire and to bring shifus and godless to simple Jews. That's what the project of the Baal Shem was all about, to spread the wealth. But the mitzvah was that in that generation where you had the Beis Medrash of the Mizrach Shemagi, in that generation, you had the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Who were the Jews outside of the Bat Midrash? In other words, if you take simple people like us, we're regular Hamaynam in Tafshin Ayin Hay, Jews like us were Hamaynam. And you take a portion of the simple Jew outside the Beis Medrash of the Mizrach Magid and outside the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva Eger. A simple Jew. What was the tzur of a simple Jew? So we have, of course, romanticized that a lot. The tzur of a simple Jew, in terms of emunah pshuta, was beautiful. Beautiful. Tehillim. A strong sense of fraternity among Jews, among frum people, and so on. Absolutely. Sheifas godless. Longings for Kedusha, for holiness, for Madregis, for Dregis Basham, was not anything Bechlal that was on their radar. Bechlal, not on their radar. Intellectual accomplishments, what kind of intellectual accomplishments? They didn't understand the Chumash. They didn't understand the Pasuk. They didn't understand the Siddur. They didn't understand the Machzer. When you said them, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, they don't know. Whatever they memorized in the Yiddish from what was taught to them in Cheder, they set over like machines that they memorized, and that was it. So you had an unbelievable dichotomy. On the one hand, you have Jews like Rabbi Kiva, the Mizrach Magid, and the Baal Tanya, and the Rebbe Melech walking around on the earth. You have people like that, that were like nuclear reactors of Kedusha. Kedusha beyond anything we could ever imagine. And you had Bati Medrashim. In every shtetl you had Shtiblach, and the Shtiblach was sitting four or five Jews. Not that they were a Tamid Chacham. Not a Tamil Chacham, what we call nowadays a Tamil Chacham, because he knows where on the computer to find something. That you had in a Shtiblach you had four or five Jews that were sitting around. It was Kol HaTorah Kula, Jews with Gili Elio, people that were talking to Elio Novi. Bali Madregas, Sheifas, beyond anything we could imagine. Who did they talk to? Each other. To themselves, and to each other. What about the people outside of Beis Medrash? Milking their cows. Sweet, Emunah Pshuta, and from that perspective, they were very high people, because they had Emunah Pshuta. Intellectuals? What's an intellectual? What kind of intellectuals? They didn't go to yeshiva. They didn't know anything. They're complete and total amaratsim. Complete amaratsim. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not like even a simple balabas nowadays. A simple balabas nowadays, he at least a little parsha, a little mishnais, a daf yomi, a simple balabas. I'm not talking about somebody that doesn't care. I'm talking about the people that care. An interest in things, and that they're when there's a Jewish books sale or a Jewish book fair in Yerushalayim, thousands and thousands of people. What do you think was going on, let's say, in Lodz on Thursday when they had the Yerid, when it was the market, right? The market day in Lodz. Do you think there was a stand that was selling Sfarim in the... Now, there was a guy with a wheelbarrow that had some Sfarim in it, and he would go to the Beis Medrash, and the fellows would come out from the Beis Medrash to look at the Sfarim. Do you think everybody was going crazy from the peasants, the Jews, the peasants were coming to look at the Sfarim? They're looking at the Sfarim, they're not looking at the Sfarim. So Chafetz Chaim is dragging around Poland and Russia trying to sell Mishnah Berurahs. And who are the customers? How many sales do you think it was? You think it was on the best selling list? You think there were a million sales of the Mishnah Berurah? Who was buying the Mishnah Berurah? A few people. The people who were buying the Mishnah Berurah were the ones that understood it. Only a few. And the others who felt bad because the Chafetz Chaim was the biggest tzaddik in the world, and it's not nice that he's dragging around, like selling his farm, peddling his farm. So they felt bad, so they bought a Mishnah Berurah. And what did they do in the Mishnah Berurah? They put it on the shelf. Like many people. What did they actually learn? What they actually learned was Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. I was especially in Hungary and in Poland. From the time that I was 3 years old, all I ever heard in my house from my father was Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That was everything was Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. It happened that the grandson of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch lived in my father's house for a few years also, because the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was from Ungvar, from my father's hometown. That was
Gansri
from Ungvar. Yeah, yeah. So he the grandson lived in my father's house. He was a very poor person, sadly. He was a very, very poor man. But they live with the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch now already is, if you're a chush of a person, if you'll get the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it'll only be with commentaries, you understand? And it'll be, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch didn't mean for there to be commentaries on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He wanted to make a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And for the average Jew in Europe, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was fine. Was fine. They didn't. What about the mothers? Well, the mothers were going to a michlala, to some medrashia or something. Our grandmothers, our great mothers, they sat around. They said get the tuhum. They go tup 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 tup, and they had a lot. They're worried about ayinaras, and they were thinking and studying and talking. What were they? What was the husband and wife talking about if they had the kaiches to open their mouths Friday night? Pass the kogel. What did somebody have the koyach, the chalal, to talk about? What were they thinking about? What were the conversations between husband and wife to get to the bottom of things, to get to the truth, like we make each other crazy, all of us, to get to the truth, to try to understand what's the tachlis of my life? Just imagine in 1792, somebody sitting Friday night at a table someplace in the shtetl, and the wife looking up and saying, Herr Schler, what's the tachlis of life? You look up and say, what's the tachlis? What's the tachlis? The tachlis is to be an Eilef Yid. To be nice and nice and be a Muna. To daven to the Eibush, to try to keep mitzvahs, and that the children should go in the right way, and that we shouldn't get killed. That was the tachlis of life. To have conversations, b'chlal, to have time, to be able to have the presence of mind, to be able to be in such a place. The Hamoin Am were peasants, plain and poshut. And as things began to open up, and Jews began to move to cities, and they began to become interested in an urban type of existence, and they were exposed to intellectuals, and they began to understand German, and they began to read in German, because to cross over from Yiddish to German was not so hard. So they began to read German. They began to be exposed to Goyim in the city and to Maskilim in the city. So then the old way began to crumble. And there was a longing for the truth. Sheifas for something bigger than the piece of kugel. And just to be positive, to be simple, the simplicity of the pashtus was being lost. So the picture of Jewish society, pre-modern Jewish society, was one where there was a huge dichotomy between the Hamoin Am, the average typical Jew, and the Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham in the old days would laugh at people who are considered Talmidei Chacham these days, would mamish laugh at them, wouldn't be able to have a 15-minute conversation with the people who are sitting at the head table these days, wouldn't be able to have a 15-minute conversation. There was a Yid in Baltimore. I don't know if you ever heard of him. Reb Michal Feuerschlager. Did you ever hear of him? Reb Michal Feuerschlager. You never heard of him? Reb Michal Feuerschlager was... They're starting to put out Svarm of his. There's enough to put out 50, 60 Svarm. Reb Michal Feuerschlager was one of the biggest Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer. He came to America before the war. He was a Polish Yid. He went in absolute pashtus. He didn't make himself not into a Rav, not into a Rosh Yeshiva, into anything. Rav Ruderman, who came to Baltimore, Rav Ruderman would send people from the Yeshiva. It was a pachad. Nobody could talk to him and learn. The biggest Rosh Yeshivas would come to Rav Michal Feuerschlager, and after 5 minutes he was finished with him. Was finished. But you had Jews that were Gedolim in those days. Some of them crossed over and came here. There were some Gedolim in America that came before the war, that they were people of unbelievable greatness in learning Tzidkis and Kedusha. They had no shaychus to anybody. They lived in a bubble. They lived detached from the world. They lived in a place of Kedusha. But they were not mashpia, and they had no sprach with other people. So gedolim and tzaddikim would go talk to them and so on. So what do you think was in Warsaw? So Warsaw was already the biggest city. So you had Rav Menachem Zemba was sitting in his apartment. Rav Menachem Zemba didn't hold any position, you know. He wasn't a Rashiva, he wasn't a Rav. Rav Menachem Zemba. People came from all over Europe to talk to him and learning to Rav Menachem Zemba. But who were the Jews on the street of Warsaw? The typical average Jews on the street of Warsaw, they were Elche Yidden, but they had no Shaychus to Madregas and Shivas and Godless. So you had these Gedolim, that's what Rav Kook is saying. There was Kedusha that was rampant in the world, but didn't have buyers, didn't have customers. So therefore, everything became concentrated, Kedusha became concentrated in individuals.
And which one creates the other, though? In other words, is it that the generation was low, so the Kedusha, let's say, by the Mezer Tamagid, was so saturated there because the generation needed such great doctors because it was so low, or is it the other way around, that the generation, let's say our generation, supposedly is at a loftier level, and so we always say, oh, the Gedolim are not like they were back then. So is it that now the Hamonam is sucking up, so to speak,
yeah,
the Kedusha that's available?
Or yes.
Is it that if the Tzaddikim are taking it, other generation, there's less of the Hamonam?
The Kedusha is available. The Hamonam was not, in the past, was not interested because of those conditions of life. They were not interested. It wasn't for them. It wasn't on their radar. And therefore, the Kedusha of Cook teaches that the Kedusha that was available in the world was sucked up by the individuals who still had Sheifas. And therefore, they became towering giants. Towering, unbelievable giants on one side, and little Yidlach on the other side that didn't know anything. As a result of the Mashber that took place, crossing over from then to now, that Rav Kook is describing, probably because of the exposure to the Enlightenment, v'chulu, as the Hamoin Am began to become interested in thinking and reading, also life became better, life started to get a little bit better, and I'm talking before the Holocaust, before World War One, life began to become better, and the Hamoin Am was that, and the exposure to city life, and the conditions of life becoming somewhat easier, so the Hamoin Am began to bite, like the fishing rod was in of Kedusha was lowered, and the Hamoin Am began to bite, and that was on the Cheshbon of the Gedolim. That became on the Cheshbon Gedolim. So now Rav Kook said everything is different. In the old days, the Hamoin Am were Amaratzim, were ignoramuses, very sweet and from ignoramuses, and the Gedolim were giants, unbelievable giants. All of Kedusha resided in them. All of the Madregas, all of the Shifas, all of the Godless resided in those few elite individuals. Nowadays, Rav Kook says, That's what exactly he's writing here. Achshav, haklal nisroimim al cheshboinim shel ha'ishim hapratim. The klal is nisroimim, because there's a lot of bites. There's a lot of fish. The fish are interested. The fish are running after Kedusha. There's only a certain amount of Kedusha that's in the generation. Whatever that means, I'm not going to right now. That's something that's in the Ksav. And now the Hamoinam is grabbing onto Kedusha. And the Gedol, therefore there's a lot more Kedusha spread out thinly over the generation. But the Gedolim are much smaller in stature.
So does it not create a risk of like then there are no Mashpiyim and there are no Makablam? Because if the gap is so narrow, the Makablam think that I'm already learning Kedusha's Levi, what do I need? And the Mashpiyim are not so great that they're like really blowing anyone away, so then there's no real progress.
So there is a danger of that. There's a danger of that. And therefore, in our generation, we see there's a terrible loss of Emunas Chachamim and a way of looking up to the Tzaddikim. Just in these last 30, 40 years of how we see the Gedolei Hador, you had something like Rehul Yashiv. Hashem always leaves behind, like Shirayim from something. So there were, you know, by the Svadim, Rav Yavad Yosef, and by the Ashkenazim, that we had Rav Yosef and Rav Shlomo Zalman. There are always La'om and Yisrael. They're always going to be those individuals that are not of the generation. That Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's also rooted in Kisveri. There are going to be a few individuals whose godless is Bechlal, not in measure to the generation, like the Ragi Chavar in that generation. Bechlal wasn't from that time. The Rav wasn't from that time. And there will always be individuals like that. There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a miraculous way of preserving Seder, of preserving balance. But what we do see now at times is that the typical average Jew now doesn't have the kind of people to look up to, doesn't feel that he has the people to look up to that he had in the past. So they'll just tell him, listen, you know, Chazal say, Yiftach Bedarok, Yishmol Bedarok, but he's thinking, yeah, but I got stuck with Yiftach. But they're saying, yeah, but you have to look up to your Yiftach. People are having a hard time looking up. Those people who remember Moshe Feinstein are having a hard time nowadays. The people who remember Rav Shlomo Zalman Rabach was not a long time ago. Rav Yosef was just a couple of years ago. So they're having a hard time. The whole level of Emunas Chachamim and so on. In the past, the tzaddikim didn't have to pound on the table that you have to look up to me. The same thing if you have a parent that has to scream at the kid, how come you don't respect me? It's already for fun, you know. Rav Yosef was left over from an earlier generation, not just because of his age, not just because he was from that time, because of his age. It wasn't just his age. Rav Yosef was a tzura keduma of something from a different time. It was a different tzura. Rav didn't care about what anybody thought of him. He said it was a different tzura. He wasn't swept in. Anything that we hear that's strange is only because of people that are around him, not because of Rav Yosef. Bechlal wasn't in the inyan of Nairishkeit and politics. The whole thing was to him was he was a tzura keduma. He was a survivor. He was like a dinosaur that made it into modern times. Not just because of his age. Hashem Yisbarach does such a thing. That's what I was saying about this first line after the war. Let's just say, for they put out 2 years ago. They put out one of the. They started to put together. He has letters to Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter wrote him back. There were mevatel. Those who met Rav Forschlag were mevatel himself completely to him, to his godless, and nobody even heard of him. You never heard of him. Rav Michal Forschlag. Go Google Rav Michal Forschlag. Who heard of him? Bechlal. What? Where? The Gedolim knew about him, and they all came to talk to him and learn him. But then people didn't hear of him.
Going back to what Shimon was saying, that if these Gedolim are here really ultimately I would assume
to the Mashpia. There are two types of Hashpah, Hanan. There's direct Hashpah through teaching and talking, and there's the Hashpah by being. You see, I believe B'Emunah Shleimah that a person like this, Rav Michal Forschlag, Zechor Levracha, that he was Mashpia. You know, he didn't speak English, and we never heard of him. He was mashpia. His kedusha was mashpia. His presence was mashpia. And when the Mizrach Magid and the Beis Medrash and the Tivag in that generation, they had a tremendous hashpa. I mentioned this many times, and it says by Baron Kalina, by Baron Hagadol's Matseva, that Harbe Rabim Heishiv Miavu Ulay Shmeinim Elif Ish. Rabbi Ira Kalina's Matzeivet says he brought many Jews back to Hashem, perhaps 80,000 people. Rabbi Ira Kalina didn't meet more than 800 people in his life. Rabbi Ira Kalina. Ulai Shmoinim Elef Ish. How the Tzaddikim came to in that generation knew such a thing. Shmoinim Elef Ish. What's 80,000 people? Where was Rabbi Ira Kalina? When he was on the internet or something? He had a website? Where did he go? He spoke in must have Met Stadium. What's it called now? The insurance. I forgot what. MetLife City. Whatever. He spoke in the stadium. Where did Rabbi Kalina have such an audience? Ulai Shmoinim Elef Ish. They were generators of kedusha. The hashpo was hashpo that was the hashpo was hashpo that was coming out from them. That was oozing out and was going underneath doors, inside cracks, all over the world. The hashpo of these tzaddikim, these great people, they were the hashpo. So they were not mashpia. How many people could they possibly reach? What do you think about Baal Shem Tov? How many people did the Baal Shem Tov talk to? How many people could he have gotten to? Where did he go? All right, he had creatures of derech. He made a couple of stops in places. Where did he go? How many people did he talk to the Baal Shem Tov? How many people could he have possibly reached?
He got to the right people.
What?
He got to the right people.
So, not even so much the Baal Shem, the Mezuzah Magid. Mm-hmm. See, there the program changed. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh spent most of his time talking to the Hamoinam, to Amcha. The Mezuzah Magid said, we have to do something about this, because of what you're talking about. Mezuzah Magid said, listen, I'm not going out on these worldwide tours. I'm going to get 50, 60 of the biggest people in the generation, and I'm going to fire them up and get them out. I'm going to get them out there. Right. That began with the Mizrachi Magid, that avoda of creating Talmidim, and then this one will go to Pol, this will go to Hungary, this will go to Galicia. Everybody, out, go out. But even when they came to those places, even when they finally got to those places. So again, what do you think? The Yismach Moshe was in Hungary. So he wasn't by the Magi, he was by the Chayes. But the Yismach Moshe, when he was in Hungary, what do you think? He had some sort of a bismedrish where people coming to hear, and he was macabre? No. But there also the Kedusha, the Hashpah of the Tzaddikim. And then Jews began to come Friday night to a Tish. People began to come. They began to come to a davening. And they saw something. And their hearts were taken. At the same time, the doors of the walls of the ghetto were falling. People were beginning to become more interested in concepts and ideas. They would hear ideas, the Pnimis and Hasidus that were being taught, that were being opened up to the Hamoinam. But even by the Baal Tanya we know had Chadarim. His deepest teachings of Torah, he was not talking about to regular people. He had Talmidim. He had close Talmidim. What was the Baal Tanya talking about to the Hamoinam? Mostly Dvarim Pshutim to the Hamoinam. Over time, when people began to become more accustomed to ideas, to concept concepts, and they were more intellectually driven, so then Chassidus began to open up to the Hamoin Am, began to become more available to the Hamoin Am on a deeper level. But initially, that's not how it was. There were Bati Medrashim of the Chazan Lublin, of the Rebbe of Melech, the Bati Medrashim, they were mostly, and those Tzaddikim would go to villages and towns, and things were starting to take off. They were starting to take off.
Ready. I'm a little bit confused. Without my grandparents, who had learned for what I was told generations in Salonika.
Listen, we need some Svadim. It's a little bit of a different fashion, but
that's what I'm trying to put. I'm trying to be clear. I know that their communities were very poor. I mean, the richest man was someone who made shoelaces.
No.
Okay. So but yet, there were people that created the same entity that the Rebbe's talking about. But I'm looking, now I know the Salonika, the Greek community was destroyed. The Turkish community, which I came out of, I'm still trying to find sparks of it.
No, but what are you saying? So no?
I'm just saying, what happened to the Sephardim? You know,
the Sephardim is even clearer.
I'm not talking about the Moroccan. I'm talking more of the Eastern Sephardim, Turkish, Greek, because that, Rabbi Yosef talks about Turkish Chachamim. That he got a hold of their Sephardim, and he said he couldn't have been who he is without them. But
Nisa, that's exactly the point. Mm-hmm. But except the difference is that by the Sephardim, we still see this by the Sephardim, since the Sephardim were not exposed to European culture, we could look at that with our eyes right now. By the Sephardim again, you had great gedolim that were sitting. They were mukubalim and tzaddikim and kedoshim, but what were the hamaynam? What was the typical Sephardi Jew?
Peasants
that couldn't read a little bit something, and they were saying Zohar, they were saying Chok, and then that was it. But you could see that even now, you have by many of the Sephardim, because everything there was coming from the East, not from the West. So it's taken even longer because they weren't exposed to Western culture. It was only recently that they were exposed to. It was 150 years later that the Sephardim began to become exposed to Western culture and to the university and so on. So if you want to get a picture of what was an Ashkenazi Jew like 100 years ago, you look at a Sephardi Jew. You can go to the Bukharim right now, the Bukharian quarter, and look at a Sephardi Jew now, and then you get a sense of what an Ashkenazi Jew was like 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at a Sephardi Jew now and you can see that's what it was like. Emunah pshuta, simple emunah, a pashtus, a sweetness, an erelachakait, and so on, but without any inyanim of learning and godless and intellectuals. They were not exposed to that, not to the universities, not to other languages. So you can look at a Sephardi now and you get a sense of what Ashkenazim were like 100 years ago. Yeah, Rabbi Oppenheim.
Before, when Rabbi was speaking about the previous eras, there were great people and there were only small people. It was bothering me, it says the Chazal, Talmida Yosef Mikula. So how did they get so great if they didn't have any Talmida? So maybe the Pshat, what I'm saying now, that it wasn't that they had Talmidim on the Vierka, but the fact that they were able to get all this Kedusha from them and sucking it up in that
kind of way. The Shakal of Atayya, that's referring to the Shakal of Atayya and the Vismedush. Those Gedolim were like honey. Bees were attracted to the Gedolim, but most of the people in those days were not bees. They were flies, whatever. They weren't bees. So they were not coming to the honey. Those young men that decided somebody's sitting someplace in a village in Hungary that he's going to go to Pressburg, he's going to Pressburg. Or somebody is sitting somewhere in a village in Lithuania, and he's going to go to Volozhin, or he's going to go to Vilna, whatever. So there was something inside. These were unusual young men that were unable to live with the peasants. They couldn't live with the peasants. There was something cooking inside, and they went, and they were Talmidim, they were Mechakim and Esrabe Sayyim. They were Talmidim, they were people that came, when they came to the Semedrash, like we have many stores like that. So then the Rashiva, the Rav, the Rebbe would say, my whole life I'm waiting for you. My whole life I'm waiting for you. Because I can't move forward in my life. I'm not able to move forward without a Talmud like you. But who were these Talmidim? They were few and far apart. And they came from crazy places in the world. The Chofetz Chaim would go around, like going back to the Chofetz Chaim, you'd go to some village and you're selling this Sfarim. Every Jew wanted to get a bracha. Everybody comes over to the Chofetz Chaim, give me a bracha, Rabbi, give me a bracha. Who are the people that went back to Rad? Who do you think went back to Rad? The bracha seekers? The ones who were putting their heads down for the Chofetz Chaim's hands? The ones who went back were the ones that didn't go for the bracha. Those are the ones who went to Rad. The ones who weren't into brachas. The ones who saw this person and heard and looked in the Mishnah Berurah, and they were standing there, they looked at the Mishnah and they said, this is what I'm looking for. And then they left Radin, like Elisha, they went to Elionavi, they went to the Chofetz Chaim. The ones who were going for the brachas, they weren't. Who are the people that went to learn by Rav Avadya Yosef? The 10,000 who went to put their heads down, they should put their hands on? No, it was the ones that didn't put their heads down. The ones who said, I'm not putting my head down to anybody, I want to understand this. Mm-hmm. The ones who put their heads down, they go for bracha, and then they go back and they do the same thing they were doing. Mm-hmm. But they think that they were blessed, so now that Parnassus is going to be better, which I'm sure helped. But the ones who are not going over, waiting on, the ones who are not waiting online, watch out for those guys, the ones who are not waiting online. The ones who look at the person and see Rav Avadya Yosef and hear what he has to say, I need to learn from this person. Not just to go there and to give a couple of gabayim, a couple of shkalim to get a bracha. I want to learn from this person. I want to hear this person. I'm looking for something in this person. So we have the Talmidim, and we tell me that yes, they're Machkimas Rabbah Sam, they're Mamish great, the Talmidim are great people, and they came from one from this village, another from that village. But the light of Elohim somehow attracted that person, this person. In all of Lithuania before World War II, I said this many times because there were studies that have been made, there was no more than 3,000 people learning in yeshiva. In all of Lithuania, in the Altaheim, no more than 3,000 people. That's one part of the Beis Medrash in Lakewood, Kanayin Har. In the Mir Yeshiva, there's just like, you know, one Beis Medrash in the Mir Yeshiva. There are no more than 3,000 in all of Lithuania. But the guys that were going, they knew how to learn. They know how to learn. You talk to an Altamir, there are only a couple left. You talk to an Altamir in learning, they know how to learn. They know how to learn. What about the guy that didn't go to the Mir Yeshiva? He couldn't spell the word Mir. Didn't know anything. In Lithuania, it was better. In Lithuania, it was better. They had Baruch Hashem, Chaburis of Mishnayis, yes. They didn't have a Yom Iyun for Mishnayis. And again, that Surah of a Jew, you still have. They're Baruch Hashem still part of it. Sit down with Mishnayis every morning. And what happens if they didn't understand what it says in the Mishnah? So what happened? They go to speak to someone. Rabbi, get by to. Didn't stop them from having a glass of schnapps and a piece of herring. The Leiv Mole, they had a piece of herring. They were able to have, they sit, they learn the Mishnayis, and they learn a little Ein Yankiv, and their fingers were hard from hard work, and they would go and they would make a lechaim and they wish each other a good day, and they didn't go around pushing the ox and pulling the ox, thinking about what's the pshat in the Beit HaMikdash, what's the pshat in Teisus Yontif. That's not how they live. That's not how they live. The same way that I've said many times here that I heard from my father's Zal Gezun Zayin, that when they were at night in concentration camp, he doesn't remember anybody talking about Teisus in concentration. He says they tell stories like this. Does that mean that the Klosenberger wasn't talking about Teisus? Yeah, the Klosenberger was. Does that mean that there weren't one or two other people that were talking to the Klosenberger and learning in concentration camp? There were. But the Hamayna'am were talking about their mother's kugels. People came to ask him questions. People came to ask him questions about what to do. And you had a great person like that. Rabbi Chaim Ashri, the author of the Mamakim, you had these great people that were sitting there and thinking about the Baruch Shalom and thinking about Torah, and simple Jews came to ask them heartbreaking questions. About what to do, but not that they were sitting around talking and learning. He was talking and learning, and he was in the Kovna ghetto. I don't think he was in concentration camp, by the way. He was in the Kovna ghetto, which was no picnic. But he was in Kovna. I don't know about whether he was in concentration camp. But the average Jew was very 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 far from learning. But the great Talmud Chacham was in a place beyond anything of this generation. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what he says. It was al cheshbonim shel ish ma'pratim shezel bechlal mahalach hatolod ha'enoshis berubeit kufas ha'historia. Rav Kook says that's how history has worked over the ages. That's how it has worked over the ages. Kedusha is seeking those who are interested, and in the past there were a select elite group of great people, even in the secular world, and the Hamayin Am were peasants far. In our times, the Hamayin Am is interested, is looking, is thinking. And the Gedolim are of smaller stature. I will continue soon.